Good afternoon and welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly radio connection to bicycles and cycling, as well as fitness and other related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is a radio show produced by cyclists for cyclists. And now here's your host, the Outspoken Cyclist herself, Diane Lees.
Hello, welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm Diane Lees, and across from me is Tim McKenna.
Hi, Diane.
We decided we'd go watch the Rising from Ashes movie last night with a huge group that came out in an amazingly cold, miserable, and slushy evening. Over 135 people bought tickets. It was a stunning movie. If you have an opportunity to see Rising from Ashes, which is the story of the Rwandan cycling team, it's an award-winning documentary. The scenery is stunning. The soundtrack is awesome. It's about 90 minutes. It's just an outstanding movie. And we benefited Bike Cleveland, which is a local organization, and the Heights Bicycle Coalition. And I hope we raised some money for both, including some of the money that went back to Rwanda. So we have a really interesting show for you this evening. My first guest is Sky Yeager. Sky has been in the bicycle business 1 year longer than me, which makes us both ancient. She started out as a bike racer, working in a bike shop, and then she eventually worked with Suntour USA. She's worked with Bianchi. She's worked with Swobo and Spot Brand. And a couple of years ago, she was tapped by Shinola. Now, Shinola, as you know, is this up-and-coming company that is combining what they love. So right now, it's bicycles and watches and leather goods. They are headquartered in Detroit, but Sky is headquartered in Marin County. She decided she didn't want to move back to the Midwest. She is originally from Wisconsin. So Sky will be with me in a moment. We have lots of news after the break, and then we're going to be speaking with Lindsay Wiskowski from USA Triathlon about what's going on with off-road triathlon, which is something I didn't even know was happening. Somehow it escaped me that we did swim, bike, run, where the bike is a mountain bike and then the run is a trail run. I mean, it makes perfect sense now that I think about it. And then right toward the end of the show, we're just going to spend a moment or two talking about Radiothon, which is coming up. So get your credit cards and checkbooks ready. It's the second week of February this year. So let's scurry on out to Marin County and speak with Sky Yeager. Sky, thank you so much for joining me on the show this evening.
Hi, Diane. Great to be here.
Good, good. It is good to speak with another woman who's been in the industry almost as long as I have. Tell us a little bit about how you got into the bicycle business and where your interest in bicycling actually emanates.
I started working in a bike shop in 1973, and I also started racing that year, so that's kind of where it all started.
And where was that shop?
In Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
Oh.
It was a Schwinn shop.
So you remember the Wolverines, huh? Out of Ann Arbor, I think.
I do. I raced against Connie Periscaven and Sheila Young, who were on that team. On the track.
Wow. So you actually have been in the business almost as long as me. I beat you by 1 year. No, wait. No, you beat me by a year. I started in 74 in April, but I never raced a bicycle, so I can't really say that.
You just got to live longer. Long enough.
I get that. So a lot of your career moved into marketing. How did you go from racing a bike and then end up in marketing, which is where I first learned about you?
My career is primarily product design.
Okay.
Which I guess is considered marketing.
Where did you learn product design?
On the job.
So you didn't actually like go to Cleveland Institute of Art and get into product industrial design or something like that. That's cool.
I didn't get an industrial design or engineering degree. I got three art degrees, fine art degrees.
Three. Like one wasn't
three.
Enough. From where?
I was putting off getting a job as long as possible.
I got it.
And at that time, it was cheap to go to college. So
yes, it was. So did you go in Wisconsin or did you leave Wisconsin?
University of Wisconsin, yeah.
Yeah, very cool. So you have three art degrees. And then how did you start with Bianchi?
I was working in a bike shop and I was doing a little bit of consulting work for Trek as far as their colors in the early 80s, and I also was a partner in a distribution company called Aerial Trading Company, where we imported three Rencho frames and Hoshi spokes and Araya rims, Nitto stuff, all from Japan.
I remember that company.
I started going to trade shows when they were on Columbus Circle and 59th Street in New York back in the old days.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And got into it and, you know, finished art school and, you know, ended up back at the bike shop. So it's kind of where everything started, was the bike shop, and then racing.
What I remember about you is being with Bianchi for a long time. You were there a long time, actually.
Yeah, the first job out of the bike shop was with Suntour.
Oh, okay.
When they were in California. And that was about 2 years, and then Suntour Japan went belly up, and then I moved to Bianchi. That was 1990.
Yeah, that was Shimano saying, we don't want any more Suntour.
Oh, right. There's a lot of factors. Perfect storm of a lot of factors. But I was doing technical marketing for Suntour. I was writing instruction manuals and stuff like that, going to races, backing up the efforts of the Japanese product design, stuff like that.
Let me ask you something about women in racing then, even though this is a little off topic from where we're going, and we are going to talk about what we originally called to talk about, which is Shinola. But women in racing in those days, like Connie and all of those women, it was so different. Inga Thompson sort of, you know, harkens back to that. It was so different from the way it is now. If you were to compare women's racing today with women's racing then, could you make some sort of a comparison?
Well, there's a lot more women now.
Interesting.
A lot more
That's
professional.
True. Yeah.
There's a lot more support. I was racing in Madison, which had, you know, Connie Carpenter and Sarah Doctor and, you know, Eric Heiden, and, you know, they were world champions, and there was no middle of the pack. It was like these awesome world champions and then, you know, me, which was kind of at the bottom, you know. The fields were not very big.
So you think there's more support for women, and yet when we talk to women today, they say that there isn't nearly the financial isn't the money today that there was then, which I find interesting.
I don't see how that can be true. I mean, racing in the 70s, there was no money for women. I mean, zero.
Yeah, I didn't think so either. Well, it's interesting. Interesting.
You know, there was a women's team that Fuji Suntour supported on the track. There was the Wolverine Club, but there wasn't the corporate sponsorship that you have now for women.
Right.
There just wasn't. And certainly when I started racing, there wasn't even mountain bikes, hadn't even been invented. So, there, you know, it was very limited. It was the road and the track, and nobody really sponsored the track as far as corporate.
So let's get back to what you do, which is product development and design and marketing. And how did you get involved with Shinola?
Well, we have a key guy there named Jacques Panisse who found me, and he called me, and I said, run away as quickly as possible. You don't want to be in the bike business, and he just kept hounding me.
So you warned him. You gave him fair warning.
I did. Yeah. I said no 4 or 5 times.
And he
just
didn't
listen. I
couldn't
imagine,
like,
the connection between watches and bikes. I didn't get it. You know, I'm so dipped in the bike industry that I was looking at it very narrowly. And then once, and Mark remembers this, I think, when we saw all the products together for the first time, it was like the light bulb just went on because of the presentation of the brand. It just all comes together. But over the phone, when Jacques had said, we're going to do leather goods and watches and bikes, I went, you guys are nuts.
Exactly.
I go, you don't want to be in the bike business.
Right. Right. Well, and in a way, if you look at the brand, it isn't in the bike business, not the way you and I think of the bike business.
No, it's not. And like I said, I was looking at it too narrowly because of my 40 years in the bike business.
Exactly.
You know, I haven't worked in any other industries, certainly not in the watch industry.
Let me take a moment to remind our listeners. We're speaking with Skye Yeager. She's with Shinola now. She's been in the bike business as long as I have, which is just remarkable. I'm wondering exactly what Shinola's vision is. So fortunately, you pretty much have convinced him, or they already knew, they're not really in the bike business.
When I say that, I mean that we're not focused only on the channel of bike dealers. That's all I mean. We definitely are in the bike business.
Okay.
We're designing and selling bicycles, but we're not, like, say, Trek Specialized, Cannondale, whatever. We're not only selling through the IBD.
How did you come to choose Waterford as your builder? I mean, they're an awesome builder. Do you know Richard or Mark?
Yes, I know Richard for many years.
Okay.
And there's not a lot of options in the U.S.
That's true, and the choice was to use a U.S. builder.
Right. For all the Shinola products, the goal is to make them in the U.S., so I feel very lucky that we were able to get into Waterford, because there's not a lot of USA manufacturing going on for frames.
That is true.
At the scale that we're doing it at.
Well, that was going to be my next question. When we talk about scale, and I'm not asking you to give us, you know, like what your sales are or anything like that, but how many bikes do you think you will be able to put into the marketplace for 2014, let's say?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to do more than 500 and less than 1,000.
That's a very respectable number for a small company. So what did you think about a company doing all this stuff in Detroit?
Well, I went into it with an open mind and, you know, very curious because I had never actually been to Detroit. So it was someplace I wanted to go for a long time. And the response that the team got when they were looking at sites to locate the company was incredible. And every time I go there, and I've been there once or twice a month for the past 2 years almost, it's just more and more amazing. That the energy in that city is just like none I've ever experienced anywhere I've ever been.
Interesting.
The civic pride, and just, I was just out at the auto show for a week in Detroit, and the people there just have this enthusiasm for the city that it's hard to know and understand unless you actually are there, especially if you're there for an event. We were the timing and scoring sponsor for the Detroit Grand Prix last spring, and we'll be the sponsor again. And I went to that as well. And Detroit just turns out for these events. I mean, everyone is so proud. It's unbelievable. There was a VIP guy driving a golf cart back and forth so you could get from the parking to, you know, the spectator area for the Grand Prix. And those people are ambassadors for the city, and they're not paid, and they even buy their T-shirts. They make the volunteers buy their T-shirts.
No kidding. Well, that sounds like the Midwest.
So they're out there working all day long, being just so excited about you visiting Detroit, and yet, you know, they have to pay for their T-shirts.
It does seem kind of bizarre, actually. Would you live there? Would you consider living in Detroit? Forget the weather for a second.
I like to say that if I was, you know, 30 years younger, I would.
Okay.
Definitely.
Okay.
But I live in Marin County, and I have a house, and this is one of the nicest places on the planet
to live.
Yeah,
no kidding.
So I don't have anything against the idea of it, of living there, but the circumstances right now are, you know, very different from, say, 30 years ago.
So I want to ask you a question that has more to do with a woman in the bicycle business, because I know what my barriers were to being a successful bicycle dealer. Did you run into a lot of barriers as a woman in the bicycle business?
I like to say that I don't have anything to compare it to, because...
Well, that's a good point.
I didn't really have a lot of overt barriers, but I know that working for the Japanese for a couple years and working for the Italians for 17 years, there's a lot of stuff behind my back, obviously. But most of the time, to my face, I didn't run into that.
Interesting.
I thought it was an advantage a lot of times because you stood out from all this sea of guys. And I like to think that if you know your stuff, you're on equal footing, but like I said, it wasn't overt. But certainly in meetings in Italy, I would be the only woman, and that was tough. And You know, there were no women in middle management. It was all guys.
So do you think, and let's get back to Shinola for a second, because that's obviously where your heart is right now. And I think your heart is in it. It sounds like it.
You're correct. I'm enjoying the hell out of it because it's outside my, like I said, my narrow experience of the bike industry. It's really cool to, like, see all the other products being developed and then certainly seeing a watch factory, you know, in our office. I'm just exposed to so many things that I've, you know, never had the ability to be exposed to before. And then there's a fashion element, which is fun, too. Just all our collaborations and partnerships and, you know, it's amazing. It's just in the 2 years, it grew from, I don't know, 10 employees to over 200 now.
Holy smokes, that I did not know. So Detroit must be like all over it, having that many new paychecks being passed out every week or month or whatever it is. That's awesome. That is
well,
awesome.
Somebody at the top has been quoted as saying, you know, we're going to judge our success by how many people we employ in Detroit. So, I mean, that's awesome.
Yeah, it is awesome.
You know,
as opposed to saying how many people we can employ in Taiwan.
Or what our top line number is, you know. It's like,
well,
how many people have jobs that didn't have them before.
Right. Yeah, you know? So talk a second about the culture of Shinola. So obviously this is a younger owner, or these owners are younger. They're not, you know, in their 50s, 60s like I am. And they have this vision for the company, and they go to you to bring you in to design these bikes. These bikes are not like anything really that you've designed in the past. They're very different.
The brand is classic yet modern. Certainly making the bikes in the U.S. dictated they almost have to be steel. So, you know, you're backed into all these decisions that dictate how something is going to, you know, how it's going to look and how it's going to be developed. And we knew we didn't want to make mountain bikes or road racing, so that sort of eliminates those two, and that means it's got to be an urban bike. So if it's an urban bike, it's got to have internal hubs, and I have a ton of experience with internal hubs. So, you know, it's kind of like that. I don't want to discount the process, but...
No, I understand.
I can't really do a carbon fiber anything in the state.
Right.
You know, we don't have any business doing full suspension bikes or race bikes, so, you know, that's kind of how we looked at the way the bikes have to be, you know, perceived.
Is your typical customer equally men and women then? I mean, you've got a different demographic than the average bike company all of a sudden, I would guess.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a really good point. I've been trying to gather data on the end user by asking them kindly to fill out the registration card, but I'm not getting a lot of compliance.
Well, yeah. How long have you been in this business?
Yeah.
I can believe that.
They're skewing older, definitely. Over 40 on a lot of on the ones that I have been involved with. Style conscious. Some of our sales are just based on, you know, how nice they look compared to a lot of bikes out there. We're in channels that not, you know, that Trek Specialized Cannondale, all the big guys are not in. We have our own stores, we have our web, and then the bikes are in Neiman's, Barney's, Nordstrom's, Saks, as far as a full presentation of the brand with the watches and the journals. So they're being exposed to people that don't normally go into bike shops. It is a different customer.
What occurs to me, because, you know, there's this big issue with the bicycle dealers that they're getting killed by online sales like Amazon.com and just all this. Well, you know what the infighting is among, okay, there's a Trek dealer on this corner, there's a Trek dealer on that corner, and the guy's going to look for the Trek dealer who's discounting by $5. And so that's always been the argument among bike dealers, this fighting for that $5. You've just taken your brand right out of that fray. It's not even there.
We're not saying we're not selling to bike dealers, but okay, there's very few dealers that can present the brand correctly and understand what we're trying to do and tell the whole story. And frankly, it's very depressing because we're showing up to these to these shops or whatever and saying, look, here's something so different. Here's something you can really sell. You can talk about all these different aspects of the company. But it takes a dealer that gets it. And right now we have 20 dealers that get it.
Do they reach across the country, or are they fairly, you know, in one area? Are you able to actually have representation around the U.S.?
Yeah, we're all over, but, you know, we have 20 dealers, so it's, you know, we're not in every hamlet, but no, there's no geographic, you know, focus. It's obviously the cities that you would imagine.
So the dealers, let's not pick any dealer in particular, but the dealers who have the Shinola brand, are they different? I mean, what else might they carry that you wouldn't normally see in ABC Dick's Bike Shop?
Well, they're a higher end dealer. The ones that I've visited present the brand as well as other brands more in a more sophisticated manner, and they're able to sell up on service and quality. I don't think they're just a commodity price point type of dealer at all. And we make, you know, for an A-level dealer, the buy-in is so low, but they get a full display of the brand, including the watches. I mean, it's just phenomenal. There's nothing else like it. You know, it's unique. It's just an opportunity for a dealer to sell something so different. Really expose the customer to something they can't get anywhere else.
I don't understand what would be the barrier to selling something so unique and so interesting.
That's a million-dollar question.
Oh, good.
I mean, I was a dealer for a while, and I just don't understand not wanting to sell something. If someone walks in the door and they're not on the web, they've actually walked into your shop, you have the opportunity to expose them to something that they cannot find anywhere else. I would jump all over it.
Yeah, me too.
But it's a complicated landscape in a dealer because of their open to buy is so locked up by the big guys. And that's the business strategy of the big guys is to keep the other guys out. So it's tough.
Yeah. And, you know, we could probably have this conversation ad nauseum. But I'm glad to see you have that vision for certain bike shops to latch on to a product that is unique and uncommon. I like that. I like that a lot. Are you going to be introducing some new models?
I've got some stuff I'm working on, but it's not terribly scalable as far as having 10 models. It's difficult to get a price, typically you go up or down on your price points when you expand your model line. I can go up, but I can't really go down. If you look at, and you're familiar with Waterford, you know that our bikes at the retail end are underpriced. And we also are doing custom dropouts. We're cutting those in Detroit. They're laser cut.
No kidding.
I opened up a mold for the Four Crown. That's our Four Crown. A lot of small builders don't use, you know, they use a carbon fiber fork that
right. They
buy and they just paint. We're, you know, this is our fork, our crown, our dropouts. You know, I mean, internal cable rotting. I mean, our complete bikes are a killer deal compared to just what a frame costs. And then you have all the custom details we're doing.
Hopefully there'll be some people who hear this and hear something different about bicycles. You know, what people hear right now is it's carbon fiber all the way down. And that is so not necessary for so many riders. You know, there are so many other people who want to ride a bicycle who do not need a carbon fiber bicycle. They're not racing the bike. They'd love to carry something with them. You know, like put a rack on the bike, put a basket on the bike, something. And do your bikes have fenders? I can't remember. Do they have fenders?
Oh, heck yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They have fenders.
See, real bikes. Real bikes.
You know, the other thing, too, is that, you know, I have carbon fiber bikes, but they don't have, you know, they don't have the integrity of a steel bike, meaning, like, I can go look at a bike I've got from the 80s, and it's great. It still rides great. If I didn't throw it in the ocean, it's not going to rust. These are purchases that if you take care of them, you can hand down to your kids.
Right.
These are not like, you know, this week's fashion bike, whatever that is. But, you know, this is something that you would hold on to and it would ride just as good you know, 20 years from now as it rides today. It's all about quality and integrity as far as the material and the ride, you know, the way that a steel bike rides. Just wonderful.
So my last question is about whether you're going to be at Interbike this year, and if so, why?
I will be walking around, but I'm not going to have a booth.
Okay. That answers the question for me. There is no need for you to do that, I guess. Cool.
I don't like that show. I don't like the show. I'll be honest with you.
It's changed a lot in the last 25 years, hasn't it?
And, you know, I've been at this, 40 years? And for 40 years, people have been bitching about trade shows, but they go every year.
I know.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If you compare that show to Eurobike, it's pathetic. No offense to any trade, you know, Interbike people listening, but go to a real dynamic show that welcomes people in there. I mean, it's night and day going to Eurobike.
So if you go to, do you take
it's
a booth?
It's exciting to think about the bike industry when you're at Eurobike. When you're
right.
at Vegas in that show, you're just depressed.
Do you take a booth to Eurobike?
We haven't yet. We're not selling into Europe yet.
That was my question. Okay.
But have you been to Eurobike?
Not yet. That is my goal for 2014. If I can get to Eurobike and not have to go to Interbike, that would be awesome.
It's a wonderful show.
You know, I would love to go to Eurobike. I just know it's so different.
Yeah, I don't even know where to start. I mean, you can take a dog in there. You can ride your bike there. You can camp. You can have beer in your booth. You can serve people. You can have parties. It's exciting. It's wonderful. It's how a bike show should be.
I mean, we're talking about bicycles, which are joyous to begin with. So, yeah, if you look around Interbike, you have a whole different sense of what the industry is, and it's not a good one. Well, Scott Yeager, this has been an amazing conversation. See, you didn't even know how much you had to say. I really appreciate you talking with me this evening. Someday you should just hoof it on down to Cleveland from Detroit. It's only 3 hours by car. I mean, literally.
That's not too far. We should do a field trip.
Well, or really what would be really cool is I should come up there and take a look at the Shinola factory. That would be fun.
Well, that's actually a really good point. We'd love to have you come up. You can see our bicycle assembly. We have a really amazing retail space, and we have our watch factory. So Mark and Benny are working on trying to get press up to Detroit this year.
We're going to have to wait till the snow goes away. I am not driving up there in this. It's a disaster today here in Northeast Ohio. Well, Sky, have a wonderful rest of the winter and spring. And I will talk to you again. I would like to talk with
All
you
right,
again. I think
Diane.
You're pretty awesome. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
Sky Yeager joined me from her office in Marin County. I really enjoyed speaking with Sky. She was very reluctant right before we went on the air. She was like, I don't know if I can do this. And I'm like, you're going to be fine. She was fine. I am going to go up to Detroit at some point and take a look at the Shinola factory. I think that would be a lot of fun. We are going to take a short break. We will be right back on the Outspoken Cyclist with some news, and then we'll head out to Colorado Springs and talk triathlon.
On February 22nd, John Carroll University's Students for Social Justice and Sigma Phi Epsilon invite families with children who have Down syndrome, autism, or any other related disability to join them from 11 a.m. till 2 p.m. for Danny's Day. Each child will pair up with a JCU student and participate in a variety of activities, such as karaoke, face painting, and more. This event is free, but pre-registration is required by emailing Danny's Day, that's DANIESDAY, at jcu.edu, or call 216-397-4698 for more information.
Imagine a friend has just told you they were diagnosed with a mental illness. What would you do? Awkward, isn't it? But what's even more awkward is, if you're not there for them, they'll be less likely to recover. Mental illness. What a difference a friend makes. To learn more, go to whatadifference.org. This message is brought to you by the Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
We are back on The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm Diane Lees.
And I'm Tim McKenna.
And Tim, what do you have for us for your first news item tonight?
Well, one that seems a little bit more typical, although we don't like to hear it very much. 6,000 online cycling shoppers' credit card details stolen in a cyber attack.
What are we, Target now? No, targeted is
yes.
More like it.
up to 6,000 online shoppers buying Easton, Giro, Black, Burn, and Bell products had their personal details, including credit card numbers and security codes, stolen in a cyber attack.
And this is actually on the Easton Bell Sports online store?
Yes, this was everything that was e-commerce, and Easton Bell shut down the affected servers once they found everything out. The interesting thing is, all but one customer, someone that was in Puerto Rico, all customers were based in America.
How nice. So I guess the answer to that is go to your bike shop and buy Easton Bell Sports products. Don't
yes,
buy them online.
And pay cash.
And pay cash. Don't use your credit card. Well, I mean, we have our own, you know, credit card terminals in the bike shops, I would think. Well, I have a good one. You're going to like this. It's another recall. And guess who the company is? Oh, let's see.
Is it SRAM?
No, it's not SRAM.
Good.
Another big one, though. This recall involves model year 2013 Trek Madone bicycles with model numbers 5.2, 5.9, 6.2, 6.5, 7.7, or 7.9, and serial numbers beginning with W, T, U, and ending with G or H. A list of all serial numbers included in the recall is at trekbikes.com. Some of the recalled models are custom-ordered Project One Madones. The model numbers are, the model number is printed on the bicycle frame. Usually it's on either the bottom bracket underneath the crank or on the rear dropout. The serial number is printed on a sticker underneath the bottom bracket. The bicycles were sold in a variety of colors. And according to the CPSC, Trek reported 5 reports of loose front brakes, attachment bolts. No injuries have been reported. So that's the good news. The remedy, get your bike to the bike shop and let them fix it. They will replace your front brake system for free. The bicycles were sold at nationwide stores from July of 2012 through December of 2013 for between $3,400 and $6,300 and custom models between $4,000 and $15,000. Here's an interesting point as far as I'm concerned. It says importer, Trek Bicycle Corp. Distributor, Trek Bicycle Corp. Manufactured in Taiwan, U.S. and Germany.
So they're not telling us where all the defective ones came from.
No. And, you know, most people think, oh, I have a Trek. It was made here. Well, evidently, that's not always altogether true. And these Madones, you know, that's their signature top of the line bike. So
did they say how many bikes this affected? I know you listed all the serial numbers.
You know what? I thought it did, but somehow I missed it. How many actual bikes there were? No, let's see. Is there an actual number? Oh, 6,800 units.
Wow.
Wow, that's a lot of bikes.
That's a lot of bikes. And I think in that price point also, you're going to find out most people are going to be aware that they're having a problem already.
Well, unless you're like a lot of people who do not use their front brakes. There are people who just say, we don't need no stinking brakes.
They only slow you down.
Yeah, that's what Brian always says. You know, put all that effort into going fast. Why do you need to slow down? All right, what you got next?
Just another tidbit while we're talking about money and lots of it. The Lance Armstrong doping probe is budgeted to cost $3.3 million. And this comes from UCI. That's how much they're going to set aside just for the doping probe. I'd be willing to do that for about $300,000. I could tell them what they really want to know and what they're going to come up with instead of spending all that money.
I saw something come across the feed, although I didn't actually you know, put it in a place where we could talk about it today, that Brian Cookson, who is the new head of the UCI, is actually saying maybe he'd reach out to Mr. Armstrong or let Mr. Armstrong come to him and they might actually have a conversation. We should see how that goes. We'll follow that. Well, we always follow that because it's always news. So, you know, there are a lot of unsung heroes out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yes? Okay. This week, one came to light who didn't think twice about doing what he did. His name is Ivan. He works for the Pedal Pusher Bike Shop at 2nd Avenue and 69th Street in New York City. His boss, Roger, wrote this short piece for our National Bicycle Dealers Association e-bike list, and he and Ivan gave me permission to share it. I called them up and said, oh, my God, this story is just too good not to share. There are some gruesome details, so if you can't stand gruesome, cover your ears. Last Saturday morning, while we were putting bikes outside, one of my employees heard a scream, ran down to the corner, and found an injured pedestrian whose leg had been severed by a truck. He fashioned a tourniquet with a sweater from a bystander and applied pressure to the femoral artery until EMS arrived a few minutes later. Clearly, he saved the woman's life. Fox News is located just down the block, and a reporter tried to interview him, but he declined. He is a hero and so modest, he almost didn't tell me. I am so proud of this guy. So again, the guy's name is Ivan. Several of the other bike dealers read that and went, holy smokes. And they've actually sent money to Roger's Pedal Pusher PayPal account to give to Ivan. Ivan is Romanian. He answered the phone when I called Roger and I explained what I wanted. He never said a word that it was him until after I talked to Roger. But I did talk to him and I told him what a great thing. What an honest, awesome thing that he did.
I think we all hope that we could do the same thing in that situation. And it sounds like he just felt that it was what he was supposed to do.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. You never know what you're going to do. You just never know. What else you got?
Again, more and more studies that talk about cycling and being safe. And the Auckland Transport released the everything that they did in a study from last year, and some interesting things that came out from this, and one that stood out for me was that commonly cyclists run red lights to turn left. Normally, I would have thought turn right.
Auckland is in New Zealand?
Yes.
Do they drive on the right or left side of the road?
I knew you were going to ask me that question.
Yeah,
that part I didn't ask.
Okay.
But really, the bottom line with it is, cyclists don't run red lights any more than most people, whether they're jaywalking or anything else. And they typically do it in a safe manner. And they're also trying to clear the intersection to make it safe for everybody else when they're doing that. So we always want people to be safe when you're riding and obey all the laws. But here's a case that it helps the motorists when the cyclists can go through an intersection if maybe the light's orange and maybe they should stop. But if they keep going, to clear it and be safer for everybody else.
We like to say pink lights.
Okay. All right. Pink will be fine. I'll go with that.
You know, it's not quite red. It's not quite yellow. It's pink. All right. This is from the Milwaukee, Wisconsin Journal Sentinel. The headline itself is enough to make you kind of like, ugh. Driver allegedly hit cyclist, returns home with victim in windshield.
Okay. I'm interested.
It was written by Jan, and I hope I don't like butcher this name, Ubeler. Ubelherr, Manitowoc, which is in Wisconsin. Police arrested a Manitowoc man Saturday night after an unusual hit-and-run crash, you think, in which the victim involuntarily rode home with the driver while stuck in the windshield.
Stuck?
Stuck. The 20-year-old driver, suspected of driving drunk, by the way, was heading eastbound on Marshall Street about 8:30 p.m. Saturday when he allegedly struck a pedal tricycle driven by a 56-year-old man. The tricyclist went partly through the windshield of the vehicle, but the driver kept driving, police said. And two blocks later, the driver failed to stop for a stop sign and struck a car. After arriving at his home on South 13th Street, the driver got out and the tricyclist pulled himself into the suspect's vehicle. This is bizarre. The driver then tried to lock the cyclist inside the vehicle, police said. A witness followed the suspect to his home and called police. Well, another good Samaritan. The suspect then approached the witness's car and tried unsuccessfully to get into the vehicle while the caller was still talking to police. Officers arrived a short time later and arrested the suspect in his home. The tricyclist was able to get himself out of the vehicle and walked about a block away where police found him. He was taken by Manitowoc Rescue Squad to Aurora Medical Center, where he was treated for minor injuries and released. He was very lucky, Manitowoc Police Captain Larry Zimney said. The suspect, who has not been identified by police, was treated at Holy Family Memorial Medical Center for what was described as a significant cut to his hand. He faces charges of causing injury while driving drunk and causing injury in a hit-and-run crash. Police are seeking witnesses and trying to identify the driver of the car that was struck. Anyone with information is asked to call Manitowoc Police.
I can't imagine the force that it would take to put you through the windshield.
And you don't get all the way through or back or whatever. You're just stuck there.
Right. And then get up and walk a block away once you're all finished. Now, I assume he wasn't wearing a helmet.
I don't know. I'm just really kind of freaked out by the whole idea that, yeah.
It's amazing what people will do. And obviously, the alcohol didn't help him make a right choice and get in and drive. So,
at minimum.
Yeah.
What's next?
Well, one other thing that we were talking about was planning for long-distance rides this summer. I mean, I realize it's zero here and where we're at in Cleveland, and
it's really chilly, but plan. Yeah.
We'd love to hear either on Facebook or on Twitter, send us some ideas of the trips that you're planning for this summer or spring.
Well, I did see somebody talking about it is time, if you're going to do RAGBRAI, mm-hmm, to get your group's name in. Now, if one person gets in the lottery, usually your whole group will get in.
Right.
And that's how we got in 99. I think we were Team Slacker. Hey, I didn't name it. That was just the name of the team. But that's how we got in, with a group of, I think, seven other riders.
So is that one of those we can get our press passes to get in and we can do a remote there?
Well, there's no question that we can call the ride director of RAGBRAI, and we could probably at least, yeah. I'm not riding RAGBRAI again this year.
I haven't, and I don't have any plans to ride.
Were you
that's a lot of effort.
Sagging the group?
Well, I hear that the SAG vehicle drivers and supporters have a lot of fun. So, yeah, of course, I'd consider that.
You have no idea. It's quite the ride. Quite the ride. Yeah, I like that idea. So, yeah, if you have an idea and you're going to be doing a long ride, it would be fun to know what people are doing this year. And that's not just here in the U.S. There are rides all over the world that people do crazy long rides. Well, Bina Belinky Tran and her husband are on the Tour d'Afrique, and mm-hmm, they are posting some beautiful pictures. They were at the Sphinx. You know, they're having all this wonderful food. It's really, really cool. And they were in Africa for their honeymoon. That's why they wanted to go back. So for all you tandem riders out there, the Tandem Club of America finally launched their brand new website, and it's beautiful. So it's Double Talk and TCA, Tandem Club of America. It's tandemclub.org/blog. And Malcolm Boyd, Laura McCabe, and Sheila Hoffman had the following comments. Welcome all. We're excited to share our brand new and all free website that went live last night, January 17th, replacing the old site at tandemclub.org. We've been hammering away at it over the past 6 weeks and are pretty pleased with what we have been able to accomplish. While it's the same old address, it's a whole new look with lots more to offer you, with the most recent 6 years of paper Double Talk issues now online and new articles being added to the blog all the time. You'll want to bookmark the site and check in often. It's easier to use with no login necessary, as TCA has become a free, open-to-all web community for all things related to tandem cycling. And it is. It's a nice-looking blog. I know Mark Livingood had something to do with it because he's Mr. Tandem Guy. So it's very nice.
I think we're seeing a lot more people riding tandems also. I mean, it's just a...
It's interesting. There is a very definite tandem culture, you know. And people, I mean, I ride a tandem, and a lot of people know that. And I enjoy it a lot, a lot. I love riding a tandem. I feel safe on a tandem. Of course, I have the best captain on the planet. That's why.
Well, that makes it easy.
It does. You got another one?
Well, we don't have any more official news, but one thing that and we don't have a video of the week.
I do have a video of the week.
You do?
That's
well,
my...
I, That's your last one. I've got one to add to that. I've been watching for the Tour Down Under. And you have to Google Jens Voigt. He's always been hilarious.
He is hilarious.
He is again. So don't miss that. Go find some of the fun stuff that he's...
From the Tour Down Under?
Yes, from the Tour Down Under. I think it's a recap of day two, if you check on that. Okay. Or stage two, I'm sorry.
Stage two.
Yeah.
Have you ever ridden rollers?
No, I haven't.
Have you ever? You've never even tried. It's daunting.
Yes. I sort of tried a little bit, but that's why I say I haven't ridden rollers.
Yeah, right. So this is my video of the week is bike rollers, amazing trick by Rochelle Gilmore. So regardless of how good you think you are on rollers, I would challenge you and almost anybody to copy Rochelle's seemingly easy if you're watching her do it feet. First of all, she jumps on the rollers as if they wouldn't buck you off like any angry Bronco, which that in itself, she just walks up to him and gets on the rollers. She proceeds to pedal up to speed, and she's got a tubular tire draped around her shoulders. She takes the tire, passes it first over the handlebars, jumps it through the front wheel, passes it through the crank section, jumps it through the rear wheel, and puts it back on her shoulders. Yeah, and then she just does it again. So if you want to see it, I think all you have to do is go to YouTube and type in Bike Rollers, Amazing Trick by Rochelle Gilmore.
I've seen this, and she does. It's amazing how nonchalant and just as easy as anything, passes it right through. And if that's something that you want to try, please videotape it for us.
Yeah, videotape your successful and unsuccessful tries at it. That's our news. I think that's enough news for one night. We are going to, as I promised, go out to Colorado Springs. We're going to be speaking with Lindsay Wiskowski. She's the communications manager for USA Triathlon. Lindsay, thanks for joining me on the show this week.
Sure. It's great to be here.
Oh, good. So you're with USA Triathlon,
which
is the organization that oversees sanctioned multi-sport events, right?
Yes. So we are the national governing body for the sport of triathlon and a few other multi-sport disciplines in the U.S. And we work with athletes from the grassroots level all the way up through the Olympics.
Cool. Cool. I forgot triathlon is now an Olympic sport, too.
It is.
That's awesome.
It first made its debut in 2000. So, you know, it's been in four different Olympic Games. And then in 2016, we're actually having the paratriathlon added to the Paralympic Games program.
Oh, that's excellent. Really glad to hear that. So the reason I wanted to talk today was because something came across my news feed about the National Off-Road Triathlon events this year. And, you know, I've known about triathlons. I even was a race director back in the early 1980s for a half Ironman. But somehow or another, the idea of an off-road triathlon has escaped me. Tell me what that looks like. It's still swim, bike, run?
It is. And it's very similar to an on-road event. Basically, the difference is that the bike is a mountain bike, and the run is on a trail instead of on the road.
Aha. And distances, are they similar to what we know as sprint, Olympic, half, full, anything like that?
Yeah, a little bit. So, you know, common distances for off-road, it might be a little bit similar to a sprint or an Olympic distance triathlon. So it's a half-mile swim, 8 to 12-mile mountain bike, and then a 3-mile trail run up to about a 1.5K swim, is about a mile, and then a 30K mountain bike and an 11K trail run.
So what kinds of participation are you seeing in these off-road events? This is a growing part of triathlon?
It is. You know, we have triathlon, obviously on-road triathlon is the main segment that we work with, but we also have off-road triathlon and duathlon and aquathlon and all these other disciplines. So off-road, you know, it kind of is appealing to people who like the adventure style racing, and they're hoping to kind of take their triathlon racing up a notch and make it a little bit different. We also have, we do these annual rankings every year, and so we've been ranking off-road triathlons for a few years, I would say, and, you know, there are people from around the country who get ranked for their participation in these off-road races.
Are we talking about the same kind of rankings as for on-road stuff? So you're beginning to rank people in terms of their finishes, and will they have to qualify for certain events to get them into nationals, for example?
They don't have to qualify for our national championship. There's another race organization called Xterra, and you might be familiar with them.
I am, yes.
Trail runs and that kind of thing. And they also do a lot with off-road triathlon. So they have a national championship as well, and our national championship is actually held in conjunction with one of their local, I think it's their East championship. People can qualify for their national championship or their world championship through that event, and they can also qualify for the 2015 International Triathlon Union Cross Triathlon Worlds.
Do you know where that's going to be held?
We don't know where those are yet. So.
Where are the nationals here in the States this year?
This year for us, they're in Richmond.
Virginia?
And then, yes. And then the Xterra events are, you know, their big events are in Utah, and their worlds are in Hawaii.
So it's interesting that you've picked Richmond, because in 2015, if I'm not mistaken, Richmond is hosting a world road race, the World Championships of some sort.
For cycling?
For cycling, yeah. Yeah,
that's
interesting.
Exciting.
It is exciting. It is exciting. Do you have any idea of the number of people who might participate in the off-road relative to the on-road triathlon? I mean, do you have any idea of numbers, what they look like?
You know, I'm not really totally sure, and it kind of depends on the location. You know, last year we had an event in Texas, and we had a pretty good showing for that. But, you know, we have our USA Triathlon Age Group National Championships, and those are really our marquee event. We kind of call it our Super Bowl, if you will. And, you know, that we have just really large numbers of participation. So, you know, this is a little bit smaller scale, but I definitely think that it's growing.
Talk to me about how our listeners can find out more about both off-road and on-road. What is the website for USA Triathlon?
Our website is usatriathlon.org.
Okay.
And if folks are looking specifically for information on the off-road event, then they can go to usatriathlon.org/off-road nationals.
Awesome. Well, I really appreciate you taking time to talk with me about the triathlon market. You know, we're deep in winter. I mean, it was 1 degree when I left the house this morning.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I know. It's ugly. So it's kind of nice to talk about summertime sports and take your mind off of it. Well,
right.
Lindsay, thank you so much. Have a wonderful afternoon, and we'll talk again next time.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Lindsay Wiskowski joined us from her office in Colorado Springs. I learn something new every time. So swim, bike on your mountain bike, and trail running. Sounds like a good combination, and it will be interesting that it's going to be moved into the Paralympics in 2016, I think she said. That is basically our show, but I would like to take a moment to talk about Radiothon. Every year we ask you to pull out your checkbook, pull out your credit card, and help support WJCU. All of the money we raise for Radiothon comes directly to us at the station. It doesn't go to the college. It doesn't go for parking lot resurfacing or classrooms or books. It comes into the radio station, our little home here, where we produce the Outspoken Cyclists and some of the best college radio anywhere, anywhere. So we will be coming back to you. It is the week of February 8th through whatever 16th. You'll be able to either make a pledge online. Tim and I will be in the studio on the evening of our broadcast, that Saturday evening, and you'll be able to call in, and one of us will pick up the phone and take your pledge for you. The items that you're going to be able to get as tokens of our appreciation have changed a little bit this year, making it a little simpler, we think, than it used to be. And we encourage you to just open your heart, open your wallet, get out your credit card for as little or as much as you are comfortable giving.
It all helps. So that's our show for this evening. I hope you enjoyed it. We will be back here next week with another episode of The Outspoken Cyclist. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Lees. We'll be back next Saturday evening from 5:30 to 6:30 here on WJCU 88.7 FM and streaming live on the internet at WJCU.org. Don't forget, this show is available as a downloadable podcast also at WJCU.org, and we're on Facebook at The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.